All right, so I have a assignment for you this week, your homework assignment, to try and draw what we just read in Ezekiel chapter 1. And so next week, you'll bring that back, and we'll have each person come up and present their drawing, and we're going to vote on which one is the most accurate of the drawings. It's a crazy vision, isn't it? You're saying, what in the world is going on here? And so we're looking at the prophet Ezekiel this week as we're going through Immerse. We're going to look and see, what is this vision that Ezekiel had, and what's the significance? What was the message maybe that God was trying to convey to Ezekiel and then to us through that vision? And so first we want to set again kind of the background of what's going on. So in the books of the prophets, in the big picture of the history of Israel, the nation, the people of God have been divided into two parts, a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. It's a time of challenges. It's a time of trials. And in this time, the prophets come to them. And the prophets have a primary message. And the message is about the covenant. The covenant was this relationship, this agreement between God and his people. They had been brought out of slavery in Egypt. They came to the mountain of Sinai, and they were given a covenant. And the covenant was about the way they were to behave and also about God's relationship with them. And it spelled out when they followed the covenant, what the blessings were, and when they disobeyed the covenant, the consequences of it. And so the prophets came and they were reminding the people of the covenant. And they spoke to them of their covenant violations. And some of the covenant violations, some of the things that the prophets talked about, whether it was Isaiah or Ezekiel or Jeremiah or Hosea, they talked about idolatry, where the people of God were turning and worshiping other gods and going to extreme measures. Ezekiel even talks about the people of God sacrificing their own children to foreign gods. They talked about the people of God turning to foreign nations for alliances, to look to power and salvation from something other than God. They talked to the people of God about this word justice, which in some circles now we go, well, justice. Justice is a word that flows through the prophets again and again, and it's about how we treat people and about fairness and righteousness and right living. And in particular, these four groups of people that the people of God are called to treat with fairness and justice and consistency. The widows, the orphans, the poor, the foreigners. You'll see those phrases again and again. And so the prophets come to the people of God and say, you're not doing what God has called you to do. And because of that, there are consequences to that. And one of the consequences that God had spelled out was that a foreign nation would come and take them. And by the time Ezekiel is preaching, that has already happened to the northern kingdom. Again, the people of God split into two kingdoms, a northern kingdom, a southern kingdom. The northern kingdom was called Israel. And those 10 tribes in about 722 BC, so a little over 700 years before Jesus, had been taken into captivity or exile by the kingdom of Assyria. And then around 597 BC, the kingdom of Babylon comes and they take some of the people in Judah, that's the southern kingdom, off into exile. And this is something that Babylon and many other nations would do. They would come in, and what they would do is they would take the leaders, they would take the rich, they would take the powerful, and they would take them back into captivity and then install their own leaders. And it was a way to kind of control the country. And Ezekiel was a priest, and he was one of the ones who had gone into exile already. And so he is in Babylon. And so we can imagine probably somewhere near modern-day Baghdad. So almost 900 miles from Jerusalem. Now to us, 900 miles, I mean, that's a couple-day drive or what. There were no highways. It was a long walk, a long and difficult walk. So they've moved almost 900 miles. And so there is Ezekiel, and he's sitting beside a river. And he is there. And as they're there, the term that's often used is this term exile. And exile means they're away from their home. Imagine being taken away from your home, from everything you know, to a foreign place. They're away from the land that God had promised them. They were the people of God. They were promised a land to live in. They're not in that land anymore. They had been given a king by God as a representative. They now lived under a foreign king. They were away from their temple, this place where they understood was the intersection of heaven and earth, the place where God's presence was. Now, they understood certainly that God was everywhere. But there was something unique about this temple as the connection, the intersection, the hotspot, if you will, of God's presence on earth. There was in the temple these condensing circles that came in, and at the center was the Holy of Holies, where they saw God's presence. They thought of that as what it was. And so Ezekiel is called by God to speak to the people. Ezekiel didn't decide to do this on his own. Ezekiel didn't wake up one day in Babylon and say, you know what? I'm going to go and talk to the people about what they're doing wrong. Because if you read through the book of Ezekiel, you would think that either Ezekiel was, if he made this all up on his own, he was a little bit odd and a little bit strange. But also, who would want to do what he did? I mean, there he goes through all sorts of things. There's a moment where he is acting out and he's sharing the words that God has to say, and he does it through signs. He acts things out, and one of those is he builds a little model of Jerusalem, and then he lays down on his side beside this little model of Jerusalem for 390 days. And then he rolls over, and then he's got like another 90 days on the other side. Who chooses to do that on their own? He shaved his head with a sword and then chops his hair up and divides it up into things. He cooks bread over cow dung. Again, nobody does that on their own. But he's called by God, and then he's told by God to go and to talk to the people. And he's told by God that when he delivers his message to the people, they're not going to listen. But God also tells him, but if you don't tell them, if you don't warn them, the consequence is on you. So Ezekiel definitely has a call from God. And that call is a call to warn them and to also to speak of restoration. And we're going to talk about restoration next week. But it's a call to warn the people of the consequences of what will happen. And so there's all these things going on. And so we come to Ezekiel, and he's here by this river Kabar. We don't know exactly where it is or what it is, but he's sitting there by this river. And this is again what he says. On July 31st of my 30th year, while I was with the Judean exiles beside the Kibar River in Babylon, the heavens were opened and I saw visions of God. So he's 30 years old, which is significant because he's a priest. 30 years old was the age when they could first begin serving in the temple. So here he is. He's probably been at this point in exile for about 5 years. So he turned 30 while he's in exile, which means normally as a priest, he would be ready to serve in the temple, doing what he had grown up and trained to do. The problem is the temple is 900 miles away to the west. Maybe not a perfect analogy, but it's almost like he turned 16 and cars don't exist. He's got his driver's license. He's like, there's no cars to drive. He's all excited. He's finally reached that age. And here he is. And in this opening vision that he gets his commissioning. This is where God calls him to be a preacher. And it's similar to other calls, the other prophets. For example, Isaiah. Isaiah has a vision of God where he goes and he sees God sitting on a throne, and there's cherubim and seraphim, and they're calling out, holy, holy, holy. And you see these beings with the wings all around, and Isaiah is invited. So Ezekiel has this same sort of thing. He sees the glory of God. He's overwhelmed by it. It's an overwhelming vision, isn't it? John didn't even read the whole thing. You can turn the page and go to the next verses, and it keeps going on, and it just gets stranger and stranger. And I think one writer said it this way, when he was talking about the visions, he said, it's like trying to give a play-by-play description of a fireworks display. I mean, if you imagine, you see a fireworks display and you can say, well, there were oranges and red. How do you describe a fireworks display? And now multiply that. And here's Ezekiel, and he's trying to create a picture of it and what he sees in the vision. And visions are tricky because oftentimes there's pictures in there and they represent other things. And so we're going to look a little bit at the vision and kind of get a catch of what's going on here. So he says this, as I looked at the vision, I saw a great storm coming from the north, driving before it a huge cloud that flashed with lightning and shone with brilliant light. There was fire inside the cloud, and in the middle of the fire glowed something like gleaming amber. Who's ever seen anything like that? But what's going on here? So one, we see a windstorm. And oftentimes wind is a picture of God coming. So if we think back to the very big first pages of the Bible, the earth is formless and void, and what we see, the wind of God going across, and it separates the land from the water, so wind comes. We see cloud and lightning, just like the people of God saw at Sinai when God was there. So these are pictures, kind of stock images, regular images. If you're going to say God shows up, you often say there's a wind and there's fire and there's lightning and there's clouds. And so Ezekiel says, oh, there's a cloud. And then we get these four living creatures. I'm going to read a little bit of that again. This is beginning in verse 5 of Ezekiel. It says, from the center of the cloud came four living beings that looked human. Okay, so picture a human in mind, except each had four faces and four wings. That doesn't sound very human looking to me. Oh, their legs were straight and their feet had hooves like those of a calf and shone like burnished bronze. And under each of their four wings, I could see human hands. I don't know what that looks like. But here's this amazing thing that's going on. And try and imagine what this picture is in your mind. What exactly is Ezekiel seeing? And then it goes on. Each had a human face in the front. Well, with the face of the lion on the right side, and the face of an ox on the left side, and the face of an eagle at the back. And they had wings on either side, and the pair covered their whole body. This is just a crazy picture. So what's going on? What are these fantastical creatures? Later on, if you were to read through Ezekiel in about chapter 10, he describes this similar vision again. And in that case, he uses the phrase cherubim to describe these living creatures. Now, cherubim, we have all sorts of different ideas what they do. Now, most common, many times we think of cherubs. When you think of a cherub, what do you think of? These little like fat little babies, right, with little bows and arrows and stuff. Does that sound like a fat little baby with a bow and arrow? Not at all. Cherubim are a supernatural being. Sometimes people refer to them as angels. Angels are messengers from God. These are a different category, something different. So these cherubim, supernatural beings. Okay, so now we're going to do Bible quiz time. Cherubim show up two other places prior to the vision of Ezekiel in the Bible. Anyone want to guess? What's number one? First page of the Bible, Garden of Eden. God's people, Adam and Eve in the garden. God drives them out of the garden because of their sin. And a cherubim shows up, and the cherubim is at the gateway, the doorway to Eden with a flaming sword. But read the cherubim doesn't have the sword. It just says the sword is there spinning and flashing. But there's a cherubim, so the cherubim's been guarding. Cherubim show up one other place or mentioned. The Ark of the Covenant. So when God's people are given a command to build these things, such as the temple, in the center of the temple, again, is the Holy of Holies, the place where God seats, and there's this golden box we call the Ark of the Covenant. And what decorates the golden box at the top? Cherubim. So when we think cherubim, we think the presence and the protection of God. So when cherubim show up, there's this sense of here's where God's presence is. And so they've got four faces. There's a human face, a lion face, an ox face, an eagle face. Now, people debate exactly what that means, but it seems like it's likely a symbol of all creation. So we have the lion representing the wild domain, the oxen representing the domesticated animals, and the eagles representing the birds, and then there's humans. And so it's a picture of all creation, and even that number four, four directions they face, one each direction, right? And so we think of even the same way we would say from every direction, right? From north, south, east, and west. And so it's a picture of what's going on. What else did you see in this picture? What else stood out to you, or what else did you hear in that was, there's a whole lot of movement going on, isn't there? Just potentially, just constantly moving of what's going on. So this is verse 12. They went in whatever direction the Spirit chose, and they moved straight forward in any direction without turning around. I don't know how that works physically. I mean, I took years of physics in college. I studied engineering. I was like, I don't know how you can move in any direction without turning around. How many of you could, I mean, like, I guess you could kind of, but it's a strange thing to do. They're going, and they're, but what's the point? They're going wherever they want. They can go wherever they want to go. And so they're continuing on and they're moving in any direction. But I want to read part that I really like is in verse 15. It says, I looked at these beings. I saw four wheels touching the ground beside them, one wheel belonging to each. The wheels sparkled as made of beryl. All four wheels looked alike and were made the same. Each wheel had a second wheel turning crosswise within it. The beings can move in any of the four directions they face without turning around. And then this is verse 18, which I like. The rims of the four wheels were tall and frightening, and they were covered with eyes all around. But what I really like is the way the NIV translates it. And so this is the NIV, the same word. The rims were high and awesome. And all four rims were full of eyes all around. And every time I read that verse, I think of like one of those cars, like, you know, it's all like maybe sitting low or jacked way up, and they got the big wheels with the spinners on them or the flashing lights and stuff. And you're like, oh yeah, maybe there's like a giant bass in the trunk, and like there's no room in the trunk because there's a bass and it's just kind of thumping like a boot in a dryer. And there's this thing, but there's this awesome car. Here's God, and he shows up, and Ezekiel looks like, oh yeah, he's got a car. It's got the rims that are high and awesome. We think, what is going on? Now, obviously, Ezekiel didn't know anything about cars. I get it. But it's this picture of this incredible thing that we're supposed to see. And what is this high and awesome car that he's driving? I'm going to skip down to verse 25. And it says, above this surface, and this is talking about all these things going on, was something that looked like a throne made of lapis lazuli. And on this throne, high above, was a figure whose appearance resembled a man. From what appeared to be his waist, he looked like gleaming amber, flickering like fire. And from his waist down, he looked like a burning flame, shining with splendor. All around him was a glowing halo, like a rainbow shining in the clouds on a rainy day. And then it says, this is what the glory of the Lord looked like to me. He saw the glory of the Lord. In other words, what is going on? This incredible vision that he sees with these crazy looking creatures and these high and awesome rims spinning and everything going on and goes in every direction. What is it? It's God's mobile throne. It's the presence of God going wherever he wants. It's the glory of God. So Ezekiel is there and he said, I saw the glory of God here. We think, oh, okay, he saw the glory of God. But there's some significance behind that. Because what did I say earlier? Where is the glory of God for the people of Israel? In the temple, in the Holy of Holies. Where is Ezekiel? 900 miles to the east in Babylon. And the glory of God is here. And so Ezekiel is seeing something special, that God's glory is there. This presence that was supposed to be in the Holy of Holies is there. Why does this matter? Why does it matter that Ezekiel sees this incredible throne here? Because I think it's a message, part of the message from God that he's giving Ezekiel, that even in exile, even far, far away, God is not absent. No matter how far you get from the familiar, no matter how far you get from where you think you're supposed to be, God is not absent. In fact, God comes to his people there. Why are they in exile? Because they've been disobedient. Why are they in exile? Because they've been worshiping other gods. Why are they in exile? Because they've been giving themselves to foreign alliances. Why are they giving themselves to God? Because they've been corrupt and they've been oppressing the poor and the widow and the foreigners and the orphans. They're there, but God still comes to them. God shows up there. And we see that this awesome throne of God can go wherever, anywhere. That the people in exile, who feel like everything has been taken them, God shows up there. In other words, God hasn't abandoned them. Though they're in exile, though they're suffering the consequences of sin, it's a reminder that God has not forgotten them. It's also a reminder that God is not limited by geography. God is not limited by place. God is not limited, but he instead shows up there. And so as we think about the story, it's a reminder to us that where God goes, where God decides to act, isn't limited. Do we ever put limits on God, on where he can go and where he can act? Maybe we look down the street and we hear, oh, God's doing something at that church. Well, I'm not sure God can do anything in that church. I know some of those people. I know that pastor. I know, like, their theology is a little bit different than ours. I'm not sure God can show up there. Or maybe it's an individual we think like, yeah, I know her past. I know what he did when he was little. I'm not sure God can do anything there. And what God reminds Ezekiel and reminds us is, don't put your limits on God. Don't decide where God can and cannot go. He goes to his own people in exile. Jesus came to us And as Paul reminds us in one of his letters, he came while we were yet sinners. He enters in. Jesus goes to places. And so God shows up, and God shows up in unexpected places to unexpected people. And so it's a reminder to us when we think about who God is to not try and put him and define him and put some sort of limits on it. Or maybe we can think of it another way, that God is not constrained by a certain way of doing things. We fall into that habit in church sometimes, in our personal lives and in our corporate life, where we think God does things in a particular way. Maybe we think, well, I know the best way because when I was growing up, here's the way we did church. We sang a certain number of songs. We sang in a certain way. We said these certain prayers. And during those times in church, I was growing and thriving in my faith. So that's what we need to do here today because that's how God acts. Or we maybe think about how can we reach the community around us? Well, we should go knocking on the doors because when I was growing, or 25 years ago, we went going and we went through the neighborhoods and we put hangers on the door and we knocked on the doors. And people came to the church in droves. So that's what we need to do because that's how God works. And Ezekiel's saying, not always. God can work in different ways and in different places and in different times. That the way God works, just because he did it one way before, doesn't mean he'll do it the same way again. And so Ezekiel is learning lessons here about who God is. He grew up thinking this is where God stays and this is where the glory of God is. And then the glory of God shows up in exile. And all of a sudden his mind starts to think in a different way. His imagination is reshaped. And he says, wait a minute, God isn't limited by the old way of doing things. God isn't limited to one particular place. God can do things in different ways. And so as we think about where we are, and we're not in exile in the same sense that the people of God were in Ezekiel. But in some sense, we are in exile, and exile is a complicated, big topic. Exile is in the sense that we are not where we belong. In the sense that our true home is with God. St. Augustine talked about the city of God, the city of man, and what he meant by that was there were these two realms, two different ways of living. You could live within the city of man and live by the ways of man, or you could live by the ways of God. And we're called to live by the ways of God. Now, we live within the city of man in the sense of we're here, but this is not our true home. So like the people of God, we are exiles. Or you could say we're foreigners, we're aliens, different language that we use. This is not truly where we belong. And so in that sense, we're exiles and we're called to remember, though, that God is present with us, no matter what's going on around us. And we're called to seek the good of the people around us. And so as we look at who we are, I would invite you in this coming week, reflect on the vision of Ezekiel, of this picture that he sees and all the images and what it is ultimately a picture of. It's pointing to the glory of God. One that God is far beyond anything we can imagine. We want to try and put God in a box. We want to try and create a picture of God. And Ezekiel tried, and he's just like, I saw this spinning thing, and then there was a glory, and there was this bright figure within it. But all I know is I saw the glory of God. And so one, we can begin with the truth that God is glorious and magnificent, far beyond anything we can imagine. The second thing we can remind ourselves as we think on Ezekiel's vision is God will show up where God wants to show up. And that we shouldn't limit where God can and cannot go. That when we see something that looks like God, it's like, yeah, God could go there. God is not constrained by the way we want to put boundaries, the way we want to set limits on where God can go, and meaning that where God can work within a church, within an individual, within a ministry, within a community. We think, well, God can't go there because those people there. Well, who did God just come to? He came to his own people who had been rebelling against him. God can go where God chooses to go. And the third thing is that God doesn't always do the same thing today as he did yesterday. God doesn't act in the same way. Now, his character is the same. He comes ultimately to call his people to be his people and to redeem and to rescue them. But it looked different. We talked a little bit about that last week. He rescued his people out of slavery. He did that with plagues and powers against the people of Egypt. He rescues his people out of exile, but this time he does it through the use of a foreign king, a man named Cyrus. He turns Cyrus, and that gets the people back. And then he sends Jesus to rescue us out of our slavery to sin, and he does that in a different way by dying on a cross. You see, God is consistent in that he wants to free and set his people free and to bring them out of exile, to bring them out of bondage. But he doesn't always do it the same way. He doesn't always do it the same way. So as we consider our own lives, as we consider the lives of others, as we consider the life of church, may we pray for God to do a new thing in an old way, in some sense. May we see God's presence this week. My prayer is you experience the glory of God. It may not look like this. If it looks like this, you may have trouble sleeping the next day. But the glory of God could be changing leaves. The glory of God could be in a child's face. The glory of God could be in so many different things. But we see the glory of God displayed. May you sense the presence of God, that God showed up. That somewhere in your life, God came in an unexpected place, in an unexpected way. I think Jan talked about that, where maybe she went somewhere and she wasn't expecting necessarily to see the presence of God in a little girl who came through the fence. And there was God's presence. And may we see how God will do things in new ways, in unexpected ways, in ways different than he has before. Because the God we serve is amazing. The God we serve is glorious. The God we serve is beyond description and beyond compare. Amen.